Vox Markets podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 456 on the podcast today. Executive Director of Decel Oil, DKL sticker, Lincoln Moore talks about their impressive 2015 end-of-year results. Plus, I have CEO of Electo Minerals, that's ALO, Mark Jones, discusses many things about the company. Plus, he answers private investor submitted questions. Also, CEO and president of Iofina, that's IOF, Tom Becker, talks about iodine, the business there, and how they're doing, and why they've rallied so strongly after the last update. And, you know, looks like we turned the company around there. I mean, check out the chart. It's amazing. It's almost doubled in the last couple of sessions. That's Iofina, IOF, worth listening to. And generally gives me an education in the world of iodine. Now, listen, I've got to say thank you very much for MRM Digital. They're a PR agency, award-winning PR agency. And you can see why, because they voted this podcast number one in the investing podcast worth listening to. I was above a podcast I listened to, which is, you know, always a nice thing. I was above Investors Chronicle, BBC Radio 5 Live's Wake Up to Money, you know, and so it's really nice to be appreciated. Thank you very much, guys. I do appreciate that. I give a round of applause here, just me and myself here. But also, if you want to show appreciation for the podcast, by all means, go to iTunes. There's a link here. Just go to voxmarkets.co.uk/blog. Click the link. Give me a 5-star rating and review, and I'll read it out. And I tell you what, today, I've got to say, I've had one of the best reviews I've ever read on the podcast. So thank you very much for taking the time to do that. And I have over 132 5-star results. Got a couple of 4-stars. Their reviews didn't get read out. So I'm slightly biased in that regard. But please do give me, you know, if you value this podcast, go there. Also, don't forget, today's stock with potential, as suggested by listeners to the podcast, is Galileo Resources, GLR. Do your own research on everything you hear in this podcast, please. But I'll read that out later.
The Vox Markets podcast with Justin Waite.
Joining me on the podcast right now is Executive Director of Decel Oil. That's DKL ticker. It's Lincoln Moore. Thank you for coming back on, Lincoln.
Hello, Justin. Thanks for having me.
Now, you've been signposting that, you know, results are getting better, and we'll go through because you've had your final results out, and they look good, as you said they sort of would. But first and foremost, you know, for new listeners and people not aware of Decel Oil, go through what you do there, Lincoln.
Justin, Decel Oil is a palm oil producer based in Côte d'Ivoire. We operate one of the largest mills in West Africa. It's a 60-ton-per-hour mill capable of producing up to 70,000 tonnes of crude palm oil per annum. Our operation is kind of unique. We're in partnership with thousands of smallholders who are the providers of the feedstock to our mill. There was a need in the country for a big player such as ourselves to come in to partner with those smallholders to give them an avenue to sell our product, which obviously great from an environmental standpoint because we're using very efficiently the amount of fruit and land available in the country. We also plant our own estates. We plant on previously cultivated areas of land. So we've planted 2,000 hectares in various pockets on old cocoa and old rubber estates. So from an environmental standpoint, you know, we sit in a very nice position as a palm oil producer. And we've just been through a period of oil production growth and our first year of profitability. So I'm happy to turn through the numbers.
Okay, cool. Well, let's first of all go back to the basics here. I remember someone that contacted me last time you were on saying, oh, that looks good. I like Decel Oil. What is palm oil? And so they had no idea what palm oil was used for. So explain, essentially, from the basics, how do you get palm oil? What is it used for?
A palm oil is derived from palm oil estates. It's effectively a tree, a very solid, hardy tree. Within the tree is what we call fresh fruit bunches. And within those are thousands of fruitlets, which we extract the crude palm oil through our mill. The product crude palm oil itself is a vegetable oil. It's the most widely used vegetable oil in the world. It accounts for over 40% of the global vegetable market, closely followed by soy oil. And it is used in a variety of products. Cooking oil is of course one of the major uses. Butters, soaps, biscuits. I mean, anything that needs a vegetable in terms of the processing or production, palm oil is used in.
Yeah, do you know, it's one of those, isn't it, products that's, you know, you turn around, you look at the ingredients on the back of most packets of anything, like a crisps or something like that, and you'll see palm oil there. You know, it's ever-present in anything, isn't it, pretty much?
It is. It is, effectively a basic food requirement. So, for that reason, it's quite easy to derive where the future growth is coming from, because it is, as you say, used in so many products.
So there's no worry about a slackening in demand here. It's always been there, and it'll grow properly. But let's go through your results. So take us through some of the highlights there, if you can, Lincoln.
Thanks, Justin. Yeah, we just released our results for the year end 2015. We've seen our production in our plant rise considerably, and that's really flowing through to our financial results. Revenues in 2015 have increased to 23.4 million euros. That was up from just about 10 million euros in 2014. We've also seen a rise in gross profit up to 5.4 million versus 1.6 million last year. So obviously growth in gross profit. But importantly, the gross profit margin has also increased. We're up to 23%. From 16%, which reflects the high production utilization of our plant. And we've kept overheads fairly stable, so we've managed to draw up an EBITDA profit of about 3.7 million euros versus a negligible result the previous year, so well up, and our first net profit after tax result as well. So a terrific year of growth, and the production that mill took last year was roughly 50% of the mill's capacity, so we have plenty of organic growth to come.
Yeah, it's just when you see these triple-digit, percentage increases in, CPO tonnage and revenue, it also signposts the fact that you are definitely going in the right direction. And like you said, you're nowhere near maximum capacity there. So going forward now, I assume, are you going to improve on this?
Certainly, we think so. We have released our quarterly production results for January to March recently, which showed our production has increased a further 56%. So where I think we'll be heading in 2016 is, I guess, in all the metrics I just described, we'll be in a much better position once again. We expect for 2016's revenues to rise substantially from the basic production of crude palm oil. We, of course, this year have the new two products, the palm kernel and the kernel cake, from the kernel crusher, which started operating in November last year. So we have additional revenue from those two product lines. The gross margin, as I said, for 2015 of 23%, we think we'll materially increase that gross margin again as the efficiencies of the plant improve and the new products that add value come on board. We also believe that the finance cost of the business will improve substantially in 2016. We obviously recently refinanced the majority of our senior debt on much improved terms, down from 10.5% down to 7%. So we expect that the finance cost of the business will reduce quite materially. And really, I think we signposted to the market early that we expect EBITDA, which this year, as I said, was 3.7 million euros, will be substantially higher. I think I said 80% plus growth this year. We maintain that line, and we obviously hope to do better than that. And of course, it's all flowing through to larger and larger operating cash flow position by the end of this year, we expect, which puts us in a great position to decide what to do with this free cash flow.
Yeah, well, exactly. Cash flow positive there. And I'm just looking at the share price, and it did break out of the range. Like we said, it had a top range of 1.3 pence pretty much. And it broke out of that, went to 1.6. And now, like always, almost often happens, when you get some good results out, it's almost sometimes a pullback, because almost people are buying in, and then you release the good news and people sit back a little while. But this I see on the chart, this is probably where a consolidation period will happen here. And I think, if people do their own research and look at the chart, it's a very good opportunity here, because, like I said, you've had the one surge here, and what happens normally, like a consolidation, ready for the next leg up. So I think we're looking at a nice little level on the chart here. I mean, it's showing 1.575 pence at the moment. But, yeah, definitely. Are you all happy there, Lincoln? It's all going in the right direction?
We're very happy. As I said, the results speak for themselves, and I think people are getting some vision on 2016. So we're certainly going to see a significant leg up again. I saw the analyst numbers come out today, so we're still valued, I think, around about 2.25, and that's on the back of, I think, three consecutive price upgrades. If you look at the basic metrics of how we're valued at around about 7x EBITDA for 2016. And I think for a company which has 13 years of corporate tax exemption, that's a relatively low multiple. So I think, you know, as we progress through 2016 and the numbers that we talked about through the first quarter translate to half a year, I think there's still a nice position to be in terms of share price growth for us.
Yeah, okay. Well, listen, if people didn't catch on to those figures or anything like that, I mean, let's boil it down into three basics, three reasons why an investor should put DKL on their watch list, please, Lincoln.
Well, certainly we're very, 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 very stable and de-risked business. As I say, the profit result this year and the operating cash flow from 2015 effectively underpins a position of which we will continue to grow. And that growth is already, I guess, starting to be explained to the market through the first quarter of 2016, where 56% production growth has occurred, and we obviously expect production growth to solid through 2016. So that obviously translates to a profit growth, a considerable profit growth in 2016 for investors. And of course, we've always said that a strategy is to reinvest, to look at development opportunities, but certainly dividends is something that we are looking at at the end of 2016. I think there will be an important inflection point for us following the half year. So I expect our half years will be out in early July. Before then, obviously, we're looking for production growth, but also we expect to refinance the remaining amount of our senior debt on improved terms. So we are going to be in a very solid position then to figure out what we do in terms of the future expansion of the company and investment of the company, and also possible dividends for the company at that point in time.
Marvellous. Well, Lincoln, listen, I'm in no doubt we'll speak very soon and you'll have some more positive news from DKL. Thanks for talking to me.
My pleasure, Justin. Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Chief Executive Officer of Alecto Minerals. That's ALO Dicker. And that's Mark Jones. Thanks for joining me, Mark.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
Now, I'm glad you're on because, you know, I've had a lot of people, contacting me on Twitter and emailing me saying, get these guys on, get Alecto Minerals, you need to talk to them. And so I'm glad you come on. So, listen, I must admit, I've read parts of your website. I'm not overly familiar with you guys. So tell us, for new listeners as well, what do you do, Mark, at Alecto?
Okay. Well, we are a mining exploration and development company. We have historically been focusing on exploration in West Africa, and despite having had some good successes by standard measurements, that is, we have not been able to manage to get the market to invest in that sector along with virtually all my peers. So there's nothing new or different there. So we realized that because of the quality of the ground that we had, if we were to make any value out of that for the benefit of all our stakeholders, then we needed to find joint venture partners to manage those and change our short-term operational focus into those opportunities that will produce cash as quickly as possible, because it's clear in the market that those who produce cash get all the benefit of investment. So that fundamentally is the background and why we are doing what we're doing currently.
Okay, great stuff. Listen, I said you're very popular on Twitter, and I had some sort of, some questions submitted. So let's go through them. I mean, don't worry if you can't answer any of them. We'll go on to the next.
But I'll do my best.
Cool. So first question is this. What short-term news can investors expect? And, of course, you've just released a bit of news, haven't you?
That's right. Because we're now going down a development path, we need to understand that there are a number of steps before we get into production from the point that we announced yesterday. So anybody who is going to follow the story should be able over the next 4 to 6 months to get significant updates around the completion of the financing, the awarding of contracts, the finalization of the detailed design process, final numbers, leading up to initially work on the ground. So that's developing the mine itself, and ultimately, hopefully next year, first half of next year, that is, will be in production.
Okay, well, let's talk about your asset resource there. Okay, let's put some numbers on it. How big is it? What's the mine life, hopefully? How far are we into knowing about all this?
Okay, well, the headline numbers, which are on our website, on the Mutala and Dunrobin project in Zambia, is 760,000 ounces at 2.3 grams a tonne. But that's a resource, but that's a measured, indicated and inferred categories. The key thing here is that what we're doing is trying to keep things very simple, low risk, and therefore we're only going to be concentrating our short-term efforts around the oxide transitional opportunity at Mutala to begin with, and then subsequently at Dunrobin, both of which are historic mines. So this allows us for a simple plant design with reduced risk opportunity, because it's going to be gravity and direct leach, CIL. It's going to be shallow because it's only oxide and transitional. Therefore, whilst it's small, the opportunity for us to get it right is enhanced, and that's probably the key thing that's driving the way we're managing this at the moment.
Okay, the next question, I don't know if you can answer, really, because it's asking you to give an answer to the entire market. So it says, why has the market not reacted to the news?
Well, I guess in some ways the market has reacted to recent events, in fairness. We have huge liquidity in our stock. Yesterday we turned almost 20% of our stock over, and we did the same about 2 weeks ago. When there's high liquidity, there's people who take the opportunity to buy and trade the stock. And that means there's always going to be a dampener, because people will chase a 10-15% profit whilst others are looking at more long-term opportunity. I just simply have to keep my nose to the grindstone. The long-term opportunities are so palatable that it matters not in the short term what traders do. It matters to me in the long term what I provide for the longer-term investor.
Yeah, and what I'm seeing at the moment, 110 million shares being traded today alone. And so you're 3.7 million market cap. Cool. All right, so the next question is, are we likely to get an update on Randgold soon? And if you could explain what that question means as well, please, Mark.
Yes, as I mentioned earlier, our West African assets are being joint ventured. It's not a good time in the market to put money into exploration. It just doesn't get the traction required. So Randgold came on board with us. We announced that at the beginning of February. It was a coup for us. They are clearly the biggest and most effective of the larger gold mining companies globally, and clearly the leaders in Mali. So the fact that we've got them on board is something that indicates, in the medium to longer term, that if they are committed, as we understand them to be, that's a big push for Alecto's future opportunity. In terms of news flow, I don't control that news flow. And I will caution all investors that they want to start from their own base programs. In other words, they're not simply taking on the information that we provided them with, using that to guide us. So I wouldn't imagine there's going to be a huge amount of news flow coming out from that. But equally, when it does, and it's positive, and it's showing commitment, investors can take solace from that, I guess.
Yeah, okay. Well, listen, apologise for any mispronunciation here, but I'll try and read this as best as possible. So it says, Dear Alecto Minerals, now with Kansanto West in Mali and Zambian assets moving forward, we have another three projects, Kansanto East in Mali, Karen in Mali and Kaboli in Burkina Faso. All three are also in joint venture discussions, as mentioned in the presentation. Could you touch up on them, please? And that's regards, long-term investor, which I'm sure you'd be glad to hear.
Right. I can say that all three are under joint venture discussions as we speak. The problem with all these types of discussions is that we only control one part of the transaction. There's always another party. It doesn't always mean that that party is as committed to a process as we are, and therefore sometimes it takes longer. But I can assure all the listeners to your podcast genuinely that we are in discussions on all three properties. There will be a hiatus as we go through the renewal process of the license in Burkina Faso. We'd like to think that that's an opportunity for short-term news flow over the next month or so. But in terms of Karen and Kasantu East, I can't tell your listeners when it'll happen. I can't even guarantee it will happen. But trust me, it is important for myself, the board, and all our stakeholders that we do the best we can to complete those transactions.
Marvellous. And the last question, which is always a classic, always a favourite for junior exploration companies, and no doubt almost impossible to answer. I'll ask it anyway. Will there be any further placings in the short term?
The answer is that we will, over the next months, be able to complete financing for the Zambian project on both the plant and infrastructure. We will bring on a contract mining company, and there will be a requirement at some point in time for working capital. The good news is that as we go down this path, the opportunities for doing other forms of financing other than equity become enhanced. And the board will take a look at the cost of capital, be it an equity fundraising all the way through to mezzanine financing, and make a decision. But cash is important, and we don't keep the tank all full, because if we start taking large amounts of money when it's available at low share price, the dilution is unpalatable to all parties. So we'd rather pick up cash, smaller amounts, until we need the bigger tranches, which I truly hope would not be equity. No guarantees. The market has to be kind to us at the time. But things are looking good. Gold. Yeah. Chinese like what we do, so let's hold thumbs, as they say in South Africa.
Yeah, and we've seen sort of almost a bounce recently in the ever-dropping commodity prices, haven't we? And it almost seems like they're stabilising a bit, if not rising, don't you think?
Look, commodity prices, I always think, are a classic lead and lag scenario. We never really get the real prices of what the true value of the commodity is at. They bounce up, they overcorrect, and they in one direction, and they become hugely down on the other. My personal view is that over the next 5 years, that there will be a slow but gradual increase in most commodities, but gold in particular. When you consider that the Chinese produce, the world's largest producers, 450 tons of gold in the last reporting period, and they consumed 1,000 tons of gold, that's 30% approximately of world demand, you can imagine that that's tremendous opportunity to push the gold price ahead of where it is now. So with the following wind, the gold price improving, and we're into gold, I'm hopefully going to be able to smile a little more cautiously in the months to come.
Okay, well, if anyone needs a reminder there, Mark, if you could give us three reasons why an investor should put Electo Minerals on their watch list, please.
Well, I think the first reason is that we have opportunities both in the shorter term. We are focused on bringing an opportunity the likes of which Zambia has not seen before into production, and we're targeting the first half of next year. That's something that not all juniors are able to talk about. Secondly, we have, following on from that, the likes of Randgold and other joint venture opportunities to add value in the medium to longer term. And I guess the third reason is that if you look at our market cap, we're still a tiny minnow. So whilst there's opportunities always in this very difficult market for prices to come off, one would hope that with some momentum behind us, that there's more likely to be upward momentum than detraction. Again, let's hold thumbs.
Yeah, brilliant stuff. Mark, thanks for coming on. Like I said, it's nice to have you on after so many demands from shareholders who come on. So listen, please do come on again when you have further news out.
It'll be a pleasure. Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Wade.
And joining me on the podcast right now is CEO and President of Iofina. That's IOF ticker. And that's Tom Becker. Thanks for coming on, Tom.
Thanks, Justin.
Now, you haven't been on before, so I'm glad to get you on. And I've been watching the share price last few days, and it's been doing quite well. So listen, before we go into that and why we think that's happening, could you give a sort of background as to what Iofina does for people who've never heard of you?
Sure. Iofina is a two-part company. It has all of our operations in the United States of America, and essentially we have two groups. Our Iofina Resources Group, which is a manufacturer of iodine. And we get our iodine from oil and gas producers. Brine water comes up with oil and gas, and in some areas that we have our Iosorb plants, we extract iodine out of the brine water and isolate it for use. And the second area of business is we have a chemical derivatives plant in the state of Kentucky in the United States, and we take most of our iodine and create different iodine type of compounds, iodine compounds that go into pharmaceuticals or paints and coatings or human health or other areas that iodine compounds go into. So it's a two-part model. We actually manufacture our base ingredient and vertically are integrated into iodine derivatives.
Okay, and so, yeah, iodine, for people who don't know, you just pointed out basically, but what is it essentially used for?
Yeah, so the biggest use in the world is X-ray contrast media. So if you have, there's some injectable iodine drugs that if you have a CT scan or an MRI, sometimes you'll get iodine-based injectable drugs in order for these scans to become more clear during the scan. There are iodine-based compounds in LCD screens. So a lot of times when you're looking at your television set, there's a polarized film back in there. A lot of pharmaceutical applications, animal health. It's in the rubber industry for to maintain rubber consistency. So a lot of different applications. It's a pretty niche market, so it's not a huge market, but it is a nice niche market.
Okay, and so you said you have five plants at the moment.
Yeah, in Oklahoma we have five Iosorb plants, and those are the plants that produce the iodine. And those are built anywhere between 2012 and completed in late 2014. And then we have a chemical derivatives plant that's actually been in business since about 1983, producing compounds from iodine and from other groups, from other compounds in the halogen-based group, like chlorine and fluorine-based compounds as well.
Okay, and so when you say you source iodine from oil and gas producers, how does that relationship work?
Okay, so most iodine in the world is made in the countries of Chile and Japan. About 85% of the world's iodine comes from those two countries. There's different models on how they extract the iodine. Chile extracts the iodine from an ore. It's a huge mining model. Lots of capex and mining equipment is needed to expand and build mines down there. The Japanese do it from brine water coming up with gas production. We do it a little bit differently. Most of the other producers that use brine water technology drill their own wells and bring water up either with just water or with natural gas. We partner with oil and gas companies that are already producing oil, and essentially they have to separate this brine water from the oil, and 99% of the time they inject that water right down into the ground without any benefit, and there's actually a cost to them to do that. So we have a basically added on to their pipeline network of the brine water, and before it goes back down into the ground, they partner with us to take the iodine out of the water, and we have our technology to allow us to do so.
Okay, so what's in it for them, essentially, and what's in it for you there?
So there is a slight royalty to the oil and gas producers to provide this raw material for us. So they are incentivized that for every kilogram of iodine we make, it's beneficial to them. For every barrel of water that they can provide to us, it's incentive for both of us, because we're going to create more iodine and they're going to get their royalty from the iodine that we create.
Okay, and so iodine prices, what are they like at the moment? I mean, are they at the, like other commodities, are they at a low, or what's happening with it?
Yeah, absolutely. Iodine's been through a little bit of a whirlwind in the last couple of years. There's some issues down in Chile and the Japanese tsunami back in 2011 that really caused iodine prices to spike. The global demand is strong and steady, but the supply during that time was weak. and that really shot up iodine prices. Since that time, like a lot of other commodities, iodine prices have fallen pretty significantly. Right now, just after the first quarter of 2016, we're seeing our average iodine prices just below $25 a kilo for large buyers of iodine. That's multi-ton kind of buyers of iodine, and that's off probably a good 20% from this time last year.
Okay. All right. So in the last few days, if we just look at a chart here, I've seen your share price has done relatively well there. And let me just chat. I was looking at a few minutes ago, and I was thinking, wow, that's going well. Yeah, pretty much, in the last few trading days, it's almost doubled, pretty much more than doubled. It went below 6 pence, and now it's 11 and a half pence. And so I'm assuming your quarter one trading update is responsible for that, is it?
I assume that's correct. We try to provide the market quarterly updates to our production and how we're doing. Back in November, we indicated to the market there's a little bit of uncertainty going on with respect to some of our activities in Oklahoma and some restrictions that were placed on the saltwater disposal sites. I think the market took it very positively that we've been able to mitigate any risk associated with that, with those restrictions, and things went up. I can't always say why stock prices go up or down, but it seemingly in this point, that's a pretty good conclusion.
Yeah. Okay. So, going forward, Tom, what do you see? How do you see the business progressing from here, from this update?
Yeah. So right now we keep expanding our iodine derivatives production. We're selling iodine globally into the global marketplace, basically for the first time over the last year, and those iodine sales have continued to expand. Right now, we're just trying to maximize the amount of water at our current five Iosor plants. We do have some other sites that are potential expansion plants out in the state of Oklahoma. Right now, with the commodity price range where we are and how we're sitting today, we have not pulled the trigger on any future sites, but I think down the road we will be looking at creating more Iosor plants and creating more iodine.
Okay, all right. So I mean, we've seen the share price gradually grind a bit lower there, but then on this trading update, it's really bounced. I mean, are you sort of, I mean, like I said, you can't tell where a share price is going, but are you semi-confident that this we've seen a bottom here in the in Iofina's shares?
Yeah, I think it wouldn't be good for me to comment too much on share price. What I can say is that, myself and the management team here at Iofina do whatever we can possible to run our business the best way we can. We look at market conditions. We look at our own internal costs and mechanism for creating the iodine and the iodine-based derivatives. And we manage that the best we can in order to provide shareholder value. Hopefully, the better we manage our company, the better the share price is going to do, because I cannot control exactly what the share price is going to do. I can only control those things within the company, which I think will benefit shareholders long term.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, Tom, if anyone needs a reminder of why to put Iofina on their watch list, can you give us sort of three, sort of bullet points, a summary, if you will, of why they should do that?
Yeah, I think, the first thing I'll say is that the iodine market's a pretty niche market. There's not a lot of plays for iodine out there. We are the second largest manufacturer in the United States of iodine. Iodine has a nice, steady, growing market globally over the last 20 years. So I think it's an interesting play just from an iodine standpoint. And secondly, with the current commodity prices kind of at its low, now might be a pretty good time, just like when you're looking at oil. When's the time to get into oil and other commodities? If you ask me, it's when it's low, and that's when you want to get into it. So when the recovery comes back, you're riding with everybody else. And I think the third thing is that we have a good experienced management team. We have good technology in order to produce our iodine, and we know how to run our plants. We've shown over the last year and a half that we've made steady progress in our production rates, and we should be able to continue to do that moving forward.
Cool. All right. So essentially, the iodine market, the demand is growing. I quite like that. And like I said, the price here is at a low. And you guys there are sorting it out in the processing side of it. So that's all good. Tom, lovely to chat to you. And, do come back on when you have some more news, please.
Great, Justin. I appreciate the time today.
Okay, today's stock with potential, as suggested by Watermelon. Isn't that a nice name? Just pictures up nice images, isn't it? Watermelon. Who doesn't like a watermelon? Pop off from you. Yeah, exactly. All right, anyway, the company is Galileo Resources, GLR. What does the company do? Explorer and developer of copper mines. How many shares does the company have in issue? 194 million. What's the current price of market cap? It's just checked it. It's about 2 million market cap, just a little bit above that. How much cash or debt does the company have? No debt, not much cash. I like the honesty there. There's three reasons why you think this company has potential. Number one, around $1 billion of reserves underground. Really? Really? Number two, selling their interest in JV for $4 million. Good. And number three, 35% free float with CEO Colin Bird holding 25% of the company. So, okay. Well, that's interesting. That's piqued my interest anyway. So that's Galileo Resources, GLR. And of course, if you go to voxmarkets.co.uk/blog, click the blog here, you can see the actual text there as well. Okay, if you have a stock with potential, it has to be below 50 million market cap. So I like penny stocks with potential, because that's what this podcast sort of aimed towards. We do touch on bigger stocks, but I think there's genuine excitement at the lower end of the market. Then please click the link here to Vox Markets. I'm going to go to the blog and suggest a stock, and I could feature it on tomorrow's podcast. Thanks for listening. Much appreciators.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.